Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Kessenberger. So we are all about local food here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, and each week we are bringing you interviews about people and places, about food and farming, about cooking and dining, all aspects of the local food community. And this week we're talking restaurants. Now we've heard a lot over the past year or so about Indy's growing restaurant scene, about all the national media attention it's been getting, and about how many new restaurants have been opening. But lately, we've been hearing more about some high-profile restaurants that have closed. Plow and Anchor closed to rebrand as The Taco Shop. Pizzology on Mass Ave closed to reopen as Stella. Long Branch closed. The Elbow Room closed. The Owner's Wife closed. And Merrow closed. So this week, we're taking a look at one local restaurant group that continues to grow and refine its brand. We'll be talking with restaurateur Eddie Somm, who with his father Ed will soon be opening Somm's Ale House, a new concept adjacent to Big Lug Canteen in Nora in their former Rockstone Pizza location. We'll talk about the Somm's brand and how it continues to grow even in challenging times. And it is a challenging time for local independent restaurants in Indianapolis. To explore some of those challenges, specifically when it comes to marketing and branding, we'll also be talking today with Young & Larimore's Charlie Hopper, whose book called Selling Eating, Restaurant Marketing Beyond the Word Delicious, covers what restaurants are doing right or wrong in trying to connect with consumers. We'll talk about some of the ad campaigns he's worked on and what independent restaurants can learn from them. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Eddie Somm grew up in the business. Indianapolis residents have been going to the Somm's family of restaurants that his dad, Ed Somm, started for more than 30 years now, and the restaurant group continues to grow. I sat down with Eddie on the patio outside of Big Lug Canteen and the new Somm's Ale House, situated right on the Monon Trail in Nora, to talk about the history of Somm's restaurants, those famous coffee cakes, and how he's optimistic about the future of Indy's dining scene.
Somm started in 1986, so it was the year before I was born, right? So my dad had a lot going on in about 1987. Yeah, so essentially my dad started in 1986. He'd been in restaurants before that. He worked at Ground Round forever, which is kind of the name a lot of people in Indianapolis know. He actually worked with Mike Cunningham, and they were together. So it was kind of funny. He became the GM. So this Indianapolis kind of, you know, mecca of restaurateurs started at Ground Round. And then from there, it was, I think, a passion, the labor of love of being at work every day, doing this thing, making his own bread, making the coffee cakes, which everyone knows about, right?
Those coffee cakes, right?
Those coffee cakes. They pay the bills. Seriously, you know, some got to pay the bills. So, you know, it was doing steaks the right way, doing pastas, doing not afraid to expand your menu and give people what they wanted. And so from there, it became Somm's Place. It became The Roost. It became, hey, why don't I do breakfast? Why don't I do dinner? Why don't I do catering? Why don't, it's like, you know, he was just one of those guys who was like, if I can do it, I'll figure it out.
So you grew up in this.
I grew up in a chaotic restaurant life where if 5 cases of potatoes need to be peeled, 10-year-old Eddie was going to peel 5 cases of potatoes. That was about all I was capable of and still might be. So, yeah.
So where did it go from there? So that was back in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
And then how did it grow over the years? I mean, like you said, was it just organically?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was organically. I mean, he's really good at finding the areas that are underserved and trying to figure out a creative way of serving them. Because just because an area is underserved doesn't mean that you open up a place and it's going to be successful. But he's really good at crunching the numbers, figuring out what area really would work for the concept, and then making that concept taste really good. I mean, that's a part that a lot of people don't talk about. I mean, it's like, does it taste good? Would you go back for it? So he's got a unique skill set when it comes to that. It really is kind of crazy to listen to him. He's like, no, let's not open up a restaurant there. That sounds like it won't work. And he's like, it will work. Let me show you why. And it works. So I think from, you know, when he grew into that, it started with just the his ability to see what it could be in 10 years or 15 years. And
so it's a long game, actually.
It is, 100%. It needs to be if you want to make a career out of it, right? It can't just be 2 or 3 years. It's got to be a long game. Are people going to live there? Do they have the money? Do they have the disposable income? And do they have the time? You know, not every place does have that, so...
So when we hear so much about the restaurants closing here in Indianapolis, we've had a lot of high-profile closures lately. What's your reaction to that as someone who has grown up doing this your whole life, pretty much?
I mean, it's a bummer. You don't want places to close, especially with talented people who make good food in places I go to. But, you know, it's cyclical restaurants that it happens. I mean, they close, and they close often. I think that good people will get back on their feet and do it again. But it's important to pay attention to people who are doing it the right way and are still open, and not forget that we're still out here, you know, trying. I don't think it's the customer's fault. I think it's our job to train customers to appreciate these things, understand why we do them, and if prices do go up, explain why they go up. And if we're doing something different, explain why we're doing it differently. You know, we got to just look at the positive things, too. I mean, it is not all closings. It's really not. There's still people who are doing creative things and here for Indianapolis and still local and been local for 35 years. So
now that is a long time in the restaurant business, mm-hmm. 35 years and to stay local. I mean, that must feel pretty significant.
Yes, absolutely. And it's you know, the crazy part is it's not even really a talking point of his, of my dad's. And especially for me, I don't like to talk about it either. I don't like to sell my beer because it's local or my food because it's local. I want to sell because it's good. Being local is cool. I mean, like, I'm happy to be here. I live down the street. You know, I walk to my restaurants, which is awesome. It helps me. But just being local, I don't think is enough. I mean, you need to be really good. You need to be affordable. You need to think about how you're going to pay your bills and are you going to be open for 10 years and can you make a career out of it and have a family. I mean, those are things I think about every day, the balance of life and having a restaurant, because margins can be thin and some years can be tough. So sometimes you don't think about those things.
Well, that's another one of the problems that we hear a lot about the restaurant business, is that it is so, so hard on family life, so hard on personal life, and those tiny, thin margins. But it can be, those kind of problems can be overcome, apparently.
Mm-hmm. They can, yeah. I mean, it's hard, and some weeks feel like it's impossible. But you have to find the balance. I mean, it does require a lot of work. I'm not sitting here saying that 40-hour work weeks are that achievable. But, you know, my goal is to give the customer the best possible experience and to give myself the best possible margins. And, you know, I don't want to price gouge them. I don't want them to feel like they're getting screwed over. I want them to come in and get a check in front of them where it's like, I would pay for that again. And then I have a margin in front of me that says I can live a sustainable life. And it's a really hard balance to achieve. You know, it's like you got to work at it and constantly make sacrifices towards getting to that ultimate goal. And then when you have it, it's about practicing it every day, you know, having the same systems in place to achieve that same effect. And hospitality goes a long way. Great service. I mean, people forget about great service can fix a bad meal. Good meal can't fix bad service. If you have bad service, the food can be incredible. People aren't going to come back. So those are the types of things I try to figure out on, you know, how to give the best possible experience and get the best cash value back for myself to reinvest in my restaurant, reinvest it in my life, reinvest it in my family and friends' lives. So that's the balance I'm always trying to achieve.
So despite the recent bad news with some of the, like I said, some of the closures that we've seen lately, are you still optimistic about Indianapolis's restaurant scene and the dining scene, the whole community?
Yeah, it comes down to customer training. You know, customer training sounds weird, but it is. It's we have a lot of people out there who want to spend money, and it's on different things. You know, they'll spend $500, $800 on an iPad or an iPhone, right? We can get them to spend money at restaurants. It just comes down to them understanding why. We are not New York. We are not Chicago. We are not L.A. I don't ever want to pretend that, you know, we're going to catch up to them or whatever. But catching up's not important. It's not. It's a different thing. It's a different vibe. So Indianapolis has a long ways to go, but not necessarily that we're behind. We can do different things. We can have fun. Big Lug for me was a different thing. It was fun. It was vibrant. It was community-driven brew pub that wasn't worried about distribution, that was focused on our own brand, not having other people's stuff. We make our own artwork. We make our own beers. We make our own food. We do stupid stuff at work. We do stupid events. Like, we're just goofy people. So, I mean, there's a long way for us to go, but I think it's about finding our own way. I mean, there's people who are doing awesome things, and we just need to support them. And sometimes places are going to fail, but that doesn't mean we should stop being creative and stop being fun and not doing new things. It's like, train your customers why they're fun and why they're new. And when they get that check in front of them, make sure they think, yeah, I would do that again.
We've been talking with Eddie Somm of Big Lug Canteen, Somm's Place, and then soon to open Somm's Ale House. We'll be right back with more from Eddie here on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are back today talking with Indianapolis restaurateur Eddie Somm of Somm's Place, Big Lug Canteen, and now Somm's Ale House. Somm's restaurants have been a part of Indianapolis for more than 30 years now, and as they continue to grow, Eddie and his dad, Ed, continue to adjust. I sat down with Eddie on the patio outside of Big Lug Canteen and the new Somm's Ale House, which are located right on the Monon Trail in Nora, to talk about how he defines the Somm's brand and the challenges of growing, rebranding, adapting, and developing new ideas as well. So you are expanding here in the Big Lug compound in Nora.
Yeah.
So tell me what's coming down the road for this area.
Sure. Nora is our neighborhood now. And Nora has a weird, you know, people have different feelings about Nora. I don't know, like, some people it's just the post office or the library, you know, and some people, you know, associate it with, you know, Whole Foods and Kroger and Marsh and Target being right next to it. You know, it's like there's all these things that people can think about with Nora. But our goal is to have a community-driven place that you can come to, and there's a trailhead on the Monon, and there's plenty of room for you just to kind of be yourself and bring a group in and have fun. So to add on to Big Lug, which has been successful and fun, was to add on Somm's Ale House Monon. So the same Somm's value and comfort and family-driven style next to the Big Lug, which is way more upbeat and young and youthful and weird, and to kind of have this balance, because the thing is us Somms, we are kind of weird. We're goofy people. It takes weird people to run restaurants for this long. So.
Yeah. So the Somm's brand is very well known in Indianapolis, very long time family. Tell me what the Ale House is going to be like.
The Ale House will be a little bit different than most of Somm's. It will definitely be more craft beer driven, which is kind of all the rage. But it's something that I love. And, you know, Big Lug, we serve all of our Big Lug beers. But this is going to be about serving our friends' beers and honestly a beer list that trains people on what beer styles are and giving really great examples of styles. So people feel like they're not, you know, like, oh, I've heard of this craft beer, but I don't know what it is. It's like, well, let me show you. Let me give you some examples. So Ale House will be that. And then also just a really fun, eclectic menu. Pizzas, tons of salads, really good sandwiches on our homemade bread, using the wood fire oven still, having really great, you know, appetizers and stuff that are coming out of there, and being comfortable, affordable, and a place you'd come back to again and again, know your server, know the owners, that type of thing.
So now tell me a little bit about Rockstone Pizza. That's what was next door mm-hmm. to Big Lug.
Yeah.
Tell me how that, why it's changing from that.
You know, when it comes down to pizza, it's a hard game. And I think some of the restaurateurs around here have learned that. It's just something that people don't do multiple times a week or multiple times a month. You know, me personally, I think about like what I do. Like there's a Chinese night every couple of weeks, right? There's a pizza night every couple of weeks. There's a pasta night. You know, it's like, but I don't eat pasta every night. I wish I could. I don't eat pizza every night. It's like, and so what Rockstone, what we found was we had people who loved the food, but it was, they come here once every 3 weeks. And it's just, that's not a sustainable thing. And that doesn't mean that it wasn't delicious or that people didn't love it. It just came down to the fact that we could do more with the space, and we knew we were limiting ourselves. And the idea that we had just didn't work out the way we thought it did. So, you know, we cut it loose, and we're going to do this thing, and we think it'll be a lot of fun.
Now, talk a little bit about the idea of doing that, of looking at how a restaurant's performing, if the space is being used the best possible way,
and completely changing the concept and brand. It seems to be something people are looking at these days.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it always comes down to numbers. You know, you got to pay bills. You got to hit your numbers, and you got to try to move forward week to week, month to month, day to day. So when it came down to it, it could be doing better, and customers could have more reasons to come back, and we knew that. Some of it was a layout perspective. I think it was too open. You know, sometimes it's hard to feel a space out when you're just building something from scratch. You just don't know what it's going to feel like. There are people out there who are really good at that, and Ed Somm and Eddie Somm are not two of those people. You know, like we need time, and so Big Lug was good from day one, and the space felt right, and Rockstone didn't. It just didn't feel right. You know, when you walked in, it felt weird, and the numbers showed that. The numbers were never declining, but they were never increasing. It was like, okay, these people like Rockstone, but we just can't get any new customers in here, so what's the deal? And so when we started asking people, it was always the same answer. It was the feel of it. It was, God, your food's really good, but, you know, we go to this place too. We're loyal to XYZ pizza places, and rebranding is not that hard, but you have to understand what your brand is. You know, changing up is honestly, it's more fun. It's fun. It's creative, and it's you're streamlining all this consciousness going on, and you're having fun talking and bouncing ideas. But when you talk about a million ideas, then your brand is just a cluster. But when you really understand what you want to be, then it's easy to just kind of get on that same page and drive. And so when Ed and I sat down, we knew that this was the right idea. And that was when it was fun. That's when it was like, okay, we got to make the change because this feels right. And we started kind of talking and laying out the design. And it was like, okay, yeah, this might work, you know, so.
What is the Somm's brand? How would you describe it?
The word I use is comfortable. You know, I always say that because we've tried to put different words to it. And comfortable goes in a lot of different directions. It's comfortable as far as the seating's comfortable. It's padded, and it's the lighting is right, and we spend the right amount of money on, you know, how much lighting and how much, you know, what goes into the booths and the build out of all that stuff. But then comfortable goes to the food. It's food you're familiar with. Doesn't mean that it's, you know, frozen prepackaged stuff or anything like that. But it's food that, you know, you'd have at home for, you know, dinner. It's stuff that your grandma might have made. It's stuff that maybe you've seen on other menus before, but done our way. So comfortable in that sense too. And then service is comfortable. We don't have a spiel that we're trying to give you. We try to let people be themselves when they're serving tables and support them as far as what makes the servers comfortable, because hospitality is always going to be number one. If you're being yourself and you're comfortable, then you're going to give someone else the best service possible. So I've always used the word comfortable because we want people to come in and feel at ease and feel like this is their place. So I think the Somm's brand has always been about comfort, you know.
Now tell me what it's exactly going to be. So right now we're sitting out on the outdoor patio. Mm-hmm. What's the space going to be like, and how's it all going to connect?
Sure. It's going to be family driven. And then it's going to be much more private as far as the seating is concerned versus Rockstone. You're going to have an area where you don't feel like everyone can see you from every sight line. You know, and the family area is definitely going to be, as far as service is concerned, where someone is, it's easier for them to get to you. It's easier for them to talk with you. It's easier for us to run your food. Efficiency is going to be way up. You know, and then from a bar point of view, we want the bartenders to be the show. We want you to know your bartenders. We want you to know that, hey, there's six people who are going to be behind this bar, and here are their names. You know, Sarah, John, Joe. You know, it's like, you know who's going to be here. So we want them to be the show, and not from a mixologist point of view or anything like that, but just when you come in, you know who they are, and they know you, and they're ready to get you something to drink. They're ready to get you something to eat. You know, carry out's going to be really easy and fun and affordable, and, you know, that's... You know, really when it comes down to that whole change, we want people to come in and feel like they're a part of something that the community was like needs. And that's what we feel like it needs. It's got bars. It's got dive bars. It's got Broad Ripple. It's got a brew pub now. It's got all the fashion mall, quick service. I'm looking at Chipotle across the street. You know, it's like, but it does need a family-driven, you know, restaurant where you can come in and just be ready. So ready to eat, ready to meet your friends, all that stuff. So trying to be more community driven and embracing it, you know, not shying away from the families.
So it will be family friendly. It will be carry out friendly. Mm-hmm. You have this awesome patio right on the Monon. How has it been being located here?
It's been great. one thing we knew would be great was people knew where the Snooty Fox was. And so when we tell people where we're at, it's very easy just to say, you remember the Snooty Fox, for better or worse, because it was a restaurant that had that, you know, in the last years, I think people put this connotation that it was always this restaurant. Well, it was on Restaurant Impossible. It's like, well, you know, it had restaurants supposed to stay open for 30 plus years for any reason. People came and they ate and they had a successful year. So, you know, as far as its location's concerned, it's hard to see. If you're a tourist or something like that, or you're staying at some of the fashion mall hotels, it might not pop out at you. But that wasn't the goal. Our goal wasn't to be a place that, you know, outside of Indianapolis was going to come to. We knew that people in this area would know where it was. And being on the Monon's great. The Monon is just a, you know, it's the Monon. People use it. People know where it is. But again, it comes down to people feeling like they're ready to come and embrace it and be a part of something. So we've made it very pretty out here. We've tried to keep it green and fun. And when you come down here, it feels organic. So we've had no complaints about where we're at.
So what do you see coming down the road for the Somms Empire mm-hmm. and Indianapolis in general?
Yeah. Empire sounds evil. You know, I don't know. It's tough. I always want to do more stuff. I like being creative. And so the hard part is balancing out creativity inside of the current places I have, and Ed has, and creativity on do we want to do new stuff. And so I think one thing we want to do is keep driving this area right here as a compound, or, you know, the Big Lug Somms Empire. So, you know, Scott Ellis, my brewmaster at Big Lug and co-owner, We've talked about doing a blues jazz bar over here with you know, lots of barrel aged beers and bourbons, and having some really fun music right next door where DG Bikes used to be. So that's kind of an idea that we've had. We've talked about opening up kind of like a farmhouse ale, you know, doing lots of saisons kind of bar around here as well. So I want to open up more beer spots that allow Scott and I to do some of the creative stuff that we'd like to do, but are limited to when it comes to Big Lug. But again, it's okay, well, do I do it here or do I do it somewhere else, you know, with Scott? And I don't know. We have a lot of restaurants. We do. And they're doing well, and we're happy with them. But Ed and I like to do new stuff. So it's about the balance of, do you just open up more brick-and-mortar spots, or do you try to give people of Fishers and Downtown and Nora something new in the spots we already have? So I think more than anything, it's about us coming together and figuring out what's too much for two people to handle and going from there. So,
do you see the city continuing to grow, the food scene here in the city?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'll always grow. I mean, you're seeing a lot of ethnic restaurants do really well right now. I'll go to Szechuan Garden, you know, some of these places. They're making great food, and you're seeing a lot of really good, you know, Mexican joints pop up. Some people don't like paying attention to the entire scene. Sometimes it's just about a few names or about a few locations, and those are great. And it's important to have those things, and new neighborhoods come up and pop up. But the food scene's always going to grow. If people keep moving here and Indianapolis keeps doing a good job of keeping jobs here, we need more income. We need people to make more money. We need people to be happy. If people are making money, if people are happy, they're going to spend it. And we'd like to give them good places to go. So I think Indianapolis is a hospitable place by nature, and hospitality is always going to need food and drinks. So, yes, it'll continue to grow. It sucks when they close. But it does happen, and you know, your goal is to not be one of those places, and to give the talented people a good place to work. So yeah, Indianapolis will keep doing all right.
We've been talking with restaurateur Eddie Somm about the new Somm's Ale House, a family-friendly restaurant that will be opening on the Monon Trail in Nora, adjacent to Big Lug Canteen. For more on the various Somm's restaurants, go to somms.com and look for them on Facebook. Indianapolis dining scene is in an interesting situation. The city has seen tremendous growth in the number of new restaurants in the past year or so, but we've also seen a number of restaurants close recently. I wondered what part marketing and branding can play in such a tough restaurant environment. So for some insight, I turned to Charlie Hopper, a restaurant advertising executive and a principal with Young & Larimore in Indianapolis. A regular contributor to Food & Drink magazine, Charlie's written a book called Selling Eating, Restaurant Marketing Beyond the Word Delicious. I talked with Charlie recently about the book, his work in restaurant advertising, tricks of the trade, and what small independent restaurants can learn from national ad campaigns. tell me a little bit about your background, especially when it comes to restaurant marketing.
I've never had a job other than writing ads. That's all I've ever
done. So you are an ad man.
You know, I wasn't raised to be that, but that's what happened. So I have only written ads, and one of the places for 18 years our agency worked with Steak and Shake, locally based company, and grew it from the Steak and Shake of the 80s. That, you know, they had a footprint, but they had kind of shrunk up a little bit to, you know, late 2000s. They were kind of starting to get really, you know, everywhere. That was a real education. Just going through, you know, starting as another set of ad guys, just doing another account to learning the restaurant business, which turns out to be, in my experience, the most complicated business there is.
Tell me why.
So many ways for things to go wrong. So many different moving parts, as you would say. There's the product changes from moment to moment. The delivery of the product isn't consistent. There isn't a lot of control over the human factor. There's all kinds of marketing issues of they operate with limited marketing funds, no matter how big they are. And so there's always this idea that your ad has to outsmart the other ads out there. And if it's not an ad, you know, if it's a way of presenting the food, the name of the food, the way the menu reads, everything has to be calculated to be the most efficient communication possible. And there's just a rhythm to it that is kind of exciting, and it can be overwhelming at times, but it can be very invigorating to just see the results. If you communicate in an effective way, then people show up and they buy, in this case, burgers. And it's really exciting to see that happen and to think that you had some part in it. So in any event, over those 18 years, we really got to the point where we felt that we understood at least certain aspects of restaurant marketing.
Now, what other types of restaurants have you worked with? Because a lot. I mean, you mention a lot in the book.
There's big and small. I worked at an agency that was a McDonald's franchisee. We work with other franchises of restaurants that people have heard of. I'm reluctant to name too many.
Well, that's what you have to.
Then I start to wander off path. But
you don't have to name names, but you have worked with a lot of accounts and marketed them in all sorts of different ways. You know, there's certainly not one size fits all.
Absolutely. One of the more exciting things about being able to grow up with Steak and Shake was the very wide variety of things that could be done, that from in-store to local store marketing ideas that were very relevant to just a very small franchisee to, you know, the more overarching communications. So, yes. And then for the other restaurants as well, you know, radio, social media, there's all kinds of different ways of getting messages out there.
So, but you've been writing about restaurants this whole time, you know. Tell me a little bit about your background in writing.
Well, when we realized how much we had invested in thinking about restaurant marketing, we decided that we could share that. And so I've been writing for Food and Drink Magazine, a monthly column, since 2011.
That's a
and
long time.
It's not a monthly column. I shouldn't say a monthly column. But every issue that comes out, and I think it comes out like 4 or 5 times a year. And so those began to mount up, and we're like, what can we do with these? And so we kind of converted them into this restaurant marketing book that, on one level, we had discussions about whether we should be revealing all of our,
these are kind of your marketing secrets,
our trick,
right?
Yeah, here's the tricks. I was like, Penn Jillette, this is how the trick is done. And yet, at the same time, you know, it's sharing economy. It's the time in our lives in the, you know, whatever, the industry. When it seems like putting stuff out there and seeing who it attracts and seeing who you can interact with as a result and become, involved with is as good a plan as any. So by putting the information out there, we hope to attract like-minded people, and that's kind of the plan for the book. But it's also kind of – it's just a good topic. It's just an interesting topic to write about because there are so many different aspects. Everything that you can think about in terms of marketing or advertising, there's something relevant in restaurants. It's really – it's a topic that can apply to any form of communications.
Now, you mentioned, you know, showing people the tricks, you know, how it's done. Are there some things that tend to work, you know, that you have identified over the years?
There are certainly things that are commonly done. We were just talking before the mics came on about, you know, just the power of cliché. But the problem with cliché is that that's what they are. They're cliché. They're very overly commonly used. And so people stop hearing them. And so then you have to start investing in just pushing the message out. So a lot of bigger chains don't really stray away from cliché because they don't need to. They can just buy your attention. But the people who have to earn the attention, they have not a harder job. Just it's a more interesting job, but it might be less of a cut and dried trick. So when I say tricks of the trade, there's not really any tricks. There are
strategies,
and there's maybe rules of thumb. But not everybody would agree with my opinion on that. And it's largely experience married to opinion. My belief is that every business has something interesting to say that justifies their existence as a business. And if they turn out after reflection not to have anything interesting to say or any reason to exist, maybe they need to rethink what they're doing because they're probably working harder than they need to get people interested in coming and spending money there. So,
well, you do have a very interesting flow chart in the book about whether a restaurant should exist.
Yeah, should you exist?
Should you exist or perhaps not? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it was just a way of visually expressing, I would say, the first part of the book, because the book flows in a certain pattern, which is to start by examining yourself and imagining, you know, why you should exist and what's your position against the other places and all that. Thinking about very fundamental stuff. Who are you and why are you here? And it's just a visual way of representing that. And it's hard to say this as the writer, but the book is kind of funny. And so it's an opportunity
to
be.
It's an amusing book. I mean, you might as well go out and say this. And that's
I'm
a
funny.
Fun book.
Yeah, I'm very funny. No, I feel like that's what I'm saying. But I'm also about the chart. The chart also contains a little bit of silliness. But it's generally, I think, pretty useful, too, to think of your restaurant, if you are a restaurateur listening, in terms of, you know, why are we here? Why does this restaurant exist?
And what do you do? Do you do something that's different than everybody else?
Right.
And then if yes, you go to this route. If no, well, then are you inexpensive? You know, and then so, oh, well, maybe you do the same thing as everybody else, but you're cheaper.
And I haven't yet discovered, and there might be local examples that are so specific and unique that they would not fit onto the chart, but I have yet to figure out a restaurant that doesn't fit somewhere in that flow chart and get to exist or don't exist.
We've been talking with Charlie Hopper of Young and Larimore in Indianapolis and the author of Selling Eating, Restaurant Marketing Beyond the Word Delicious. We'll be right back with more from Charlie here on WFYI and WFYI.org. Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio talking with local advertising executive Charlie Hopper of Young and Larimore. Charlie's career in advertising has focused on selling eating. In fact, that's the title of his book that we're talking about today, Selling Eating, Restaurant Marketing Beyond the Word Delicious, which covers branding, influencer marketing, what restaurants do right, and what they do wrong.
This book was written before the Arby's campaign, which local scene, that's an enormous fast food type place. But I think it's an excellent example of understanding who you are, because prior to the current
We Have the Meats campaign,
they ran a succession of silly, cliche, random, goofy little marketing things that nobody – it's good mood food. Well, there's no real truth to that. It's just everyone recognizes that as a catchy thing to say that doesn't have any meaning. And there was the ones that the people – I'm thinking Arby's, they had a hat. And there was, right. That's their emblem. I get it. But it didn't have any central truth to it. And then somebody – and actually I know some of the people who were involved in doing this – said, what is Arby's about? And they decided there's a space here where we can just own meat and caring right. about meat and loving right. it ourselves and wanting you to love it as much as we do. And by gosh, that rings true enough. Even though when you go into a given Arby's, you may or may not feel it, there's just enough power in that idea that it's completely turned their business around. If
oh,
you read anything about them, they've completely bounced back from their low and are doing really well. And it's, I think, not just because the ads are funny, which they are, and they have Ving Rhames talking, which is interesting.
Deep voice, right?
It's because there's a truth in it, and I think people recognize that. So then what's the local version of that? Because you can't run three ads in a football
right,
game.
Right. So what? How does that apply to local independent restaurants, which is what we tend to talk about here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio?
Yes.
And the local food scene. So what's your take on that, and how does this relate to that?
I think it's exactly the same thing. The difference is the medium and the frequency that you can get in front of people. But one of the chapters of the book is just trying to take the whole restaurant experience, starting from when you're not hungry and you're sitting at home, all the way through to walking out to your car at the end or however you got there. So
all these different opportunities that you have, right?
And because when you write a book, you kind of have to be an expert and say things in an expert way. So I say there are 18 identifiable marketing moments. It could be less than that or more than that. But it's an attempt in the book to just take each one and think about it.
Sure.
Which is really all any of this is. It's just stop doing the automatic thing
right.
and consider what else might work
right.
or be interesting. And so each moment that person is interacting with your restaurant, from the point where they see something in maybe you bought a coupon or something, whatever, when they're home and they're not hungry, to then when they are hungry, to then when they're out in the world, how do you get somebody worked through all those moments, and are there ones you could do better? Maybe you don't have to seize all of them and do all of them differently, but maybe there's one that you can focus on and make special. And this, whether it's the chef coming out of the,
because that's an opportunity as well. Someone can come out and talk to you while you're there.
Right. And then the people who experience that will be more apt to spread the word or however you want to think of it. So,
Like social media, for example, yeah. I have actually gone to a restaurant that very day based on a photo that I saw on Instagram. It's a wonderful dish told me about it. And it was like, well, it's almost lunchtime. I think I'll just go in and get that particular dish.
So I'm curious about that. What was it, do you think? Was it the nature of the photography or the nature of the description?
It was several things. I remember it. It was a I believe it was a roast beef Manhattan, which is something that I tend to talk about every now and then because it's theoretically, it's an Indianapolis created dish.
I didn't know that.
Right. I know. So that's kind of interesting. I allegedly created at a downtown deli. And it was a lovely picture. It was a place that I hadn't been in a while. And it was timed right. It was probably, let's say, 11 o'clock in the morning, right?
Yeah.
When people who tend to sit in front of computers tend to think about going out for lunch, right?
Yeah.
So it was a combination of things.
And was it a – I'll bet the picture was not a perfect picture.
No. It was I'm sure it was something that someone took with their iPhone and just posted it right then.
That's one of the things in the book, is just thinking about how do you visually present food. That's right there. I mean, talking about it is like the most complicated business. We kind of know what makes a good car photo. It's shiny.
Right.
And it's got, sleekness and the lighters on it just right. But what makes a good food photo is up for discussion. And I would say generally we are very good at being consumers here in 2017.
We know, we get it, right?
We know what's going on, and we know that there are professional people who take photos. And if you take a perfect photo of a too perfect, too styled piece of food, it loses its appetite appeal. Whereas if it looks just like it's barely being containing its deliciousness, and it's a little bit, you know, a little bit haphazard, perhaps, or amateurish, there's a truth in there. Again,
right. If there's a little bit of a drip on the plate,
yeah,
well,
you know
that gravy,
looks real.
You know,
and
really
I could eat that. That's for me. And so that creates, I think, more of a connection if the food isn't perfect. But that said, then you know there are tricks to taking a better picture versus a flat.
Oh, sure.
Uninteresting picture.
Right.
So there's all kinds of discussions. And then when you talk about, well, how they described it, I'll bet they described more or less what was in it or how they made it.
Right.
Instead of telling you that it was delicious.
They did not. I remember that. But, you know, they told me what it was, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, that it was on the menu today, and that, you know, it probably said the price as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's like all these things. It's like, oh, okay. I will go have that.
Well, and it's interesting because there is the tendency, and we've worked with clients that are like this, that they just tell them it's delicious, tell them it tastes good, because that's to them it's
right.
Very important, and they know it is,
right.
And it is,
and you want it to be delicious,
and this is just tell them that, but it doesn't. But people are ornery, and they won't just do what you tell them to do, and they won't believe what you want them to believe just because you tell them to, and so you have to figure out how to speak it in a way that. It's like, how did you make it? And by describing how you made it, that can evoke a conclusion in their mind. And suddenly they own that conclusion. They are the ones who have decided that sounds delicious. And now it's them, not you. There's fact adjectives and opinion adjectives. Opinion adjectives, delectable. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Slow roasted. Okay.
Right.
That's just
so
a fact.
Right.
And so just by having a little discipline about how you talk about something and how you show the photo or when you show the photo.
Well, it can make a difference.
All of that stuff. And then, again, we are all very adept at analyzing marketing from about age 4. And
right.
We know when somebody's just pitching us without any personality, without any earnestness. Some of the more successful restaurants that I think are currently in the market are that way because whether you know the owners or have met the owners, you sense a sincerity in them that, in addition to great food, makes you interested in it versus something that feels less cared for and less, to use a very trendy term, curated. I mean, I think right. if the whole thing looks thought about, people notice that and respond, whether they think about it or not.
We've been talking with Charlie Hopper of Young & Larimore in Indianapolis and the author of Selling Eating, Restaurant Marketing Beyond the Word Delicious. We'll be right back with more from Charlie here on WFYI and WFYI.org. The restaurant scene has gotten a lot of attention lately for its growth. We've seen dozens of restaurants open in the past couple of years, but in recent weeks we've also seen a number of high-profile restaurants close. It's definitely a challenging environment, one that requires restaurateurs to take a hard look at everything from menus to social media. Indianapolis advertising exec Charlie Hopper of Young & Larimore analyzes how restaurants market themselves and connect or fail to connect with customers in his book, Selling Eating, Restaurant Marketing Beyond the Word Delicious.
Seems to be a very tough time in the Indianapolis restaurant market. What's your take? What do you think about when you look at it, you know, from a marketing perspective?
I have two metaphors. One is if you, like, watch cable science shows, they'll talk about different stuff. But one of the things I remember is that there's lichens that show up when the environment is good. It's like they're a sign that things are good. I feel like the restaurants around here are somewhat like lichens, where it's like we're getting some good ones. And I think it's a sign of economic strength and a sign of cultural swelling locally and all the things that we kind of feel downtown and hopefully concentrically out into the rest of the central Indiana. So I think it's a good time, and I think these restaurants are kind of like the lichens on the bark. I mean, I think they exist because things are going well. And then you get into the, you know, basic environmental thing where if you get too many or if one right. grows in the wrong spot or right. something like that. That's kind of – because I think each one is its own situation. Like the one down – well, I guess we'll mention it. I'm sorry to see the Elbow Room.
Oh, right.
On the
long, long-time bar right there in Pennsylvania.
And I'll confess, I haven't gone lately, so I'm part of the problem. So what could they have done besides close? And
right.
they're probably a very specific example that I don't understand all the nuances of what they're doing. But I feel like their longevity was a marketing thing they could have used.
Right. And
that,
you know,
how they used it was up to them. But
so that I remember being very excited to go to the Elbow Room back in the late 80s, for example.
Yes,
you know,
and it's only a little past that
right,
in my mind,
right,
whether that's true or
right,
fair.
Right. But then tastes change and trends come and go and you know, bar food perhaps isn't as interesting as it might have been, you know. So tastes have changed. Has the Indianapolis consumer, the consumer of marketing, have they changed?
I believe that they have. I have also went to the Elbow Room in the 80s, and I have mostly – I'm going to say this is mostly anecdotal evidence, but I feel like there is so much more discussion about the particulars of food.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And what – words I can't even quite come up with on the fly here that people will talk about, literally talk about that I'm surprised at, that we didn't used to talk that way. So I think that there is a consumer – that is more educated, that is more interested, that is more
sophisticated,
ready,
more
sophisticated,
about food?
Yes. So I think that that's the environment that has created the lichens and a sustainability for them, and they've been attracted here, and they're thriving. And then some of them aren't, and for reasons that I probably don't know the ins and outs of, but I guess in any ecosystem, not everything can thrive. There has
to be. Well, that is true. So perhaps we have got somewhat oversaturated, overambitious.
And maybe in another year we will have,
right?
You know, the pie will have grown, to use another
right?
thing we talked about before
right.
the mic. So
are you optimistic about people and the ability of restaurants to market themselves effectively?
Oh, of course. There's, you know, you can start today. It's like
right?
Arby's just turned on a switch and then they were interesting. You can start tonight and take the menu. If you're small and you can't afford media or just like one piece of media, and that what happens then is that so much emphasis gets put on that piece of media.
That's right.
Too many people touch it.
They're going to make one buy and it better be perfect.
Everything has to go in.
Right.
Yeah. Or else it's so subtle that it doesn't. I mean, it's an art. It's.
Well, of course, it's what you do, right?
Yeah, and it's an awful place for art to exist because there's money involved in making it happen, and so everybody gets nervous,
right?
And everybody's stressed out because there's reputations on the line, and so when you can only afford just a billboard or 6 weeks of radio or whatever it turns out to be, so much tension on that. But if you can figure out who you are, if you can figure out how you should talk, if you're going to be a Tex-Mex place and you've got some authentic sauce, and you know, how does that talk versus the really, you know, foodie, interesting,
you know, a wine-driven
versions.
Menu with
right.
very, very that, chef. And
they're
right.
going to have a different way of speaking, but they can all say something about themselves that makes you kind of go, like you did with the Manhattan. That's interesting, because it is just such a small – that's the other thing that makes it so interesting. It's such a small decision in a given person's day. Very seldomly is your choice of restaurant a great big deal. Usually right. it's just, well, we've got some time. What are we going to do? And that little butterfly flap of deciding can be based on the smallest memorable detail. So, I mean, you know, what is your hook? What are some little ideas that people can hang on to? People look, you know, in social media, flipping through their phones, they're just looking for something to react to. They
right.
just want something to get two synapses in their head that have not been connected yet to go and a little dopamine bursts out. And that's all they're looking for. They're looking for that.
Now, that's a very interesting idea, treating them on social media as if you were would if they were there, saying hello, coming by their virtual table, so to speak.
I'm yearning for the best example of that, the way that I feel like Arby's is a great example of understanding who you are and rebranding yourself to be that. And I believe,
so if we could see a local restaurant doing that.
It's like the plate spinner guy on the old variety show, right. And he's got this plate over here that he's got to go over there now because
right.
it's
starting to wobble, but then the other one over there, you know?
And I understand that, especially if it's going to be chef-based, that the chef is back there spinning all those plates on poles. And let's just take the social media plate off the pole. But then what? So who's in charge of it now? And it's an issue. But maybe there's a particular person associated with the restaurant who enjoys the back and forth, who is a little bit, not even witty, I almost said witty, but just someone with a personality. It doesn't have to be a quip a minute.
Right.
It just has to be human. That's what we're looking for when we're looking at our phone instead of the person we're with, which we've all been guilty of. We're looking for a connection. We're looking for a little human eye looking back at us.
We've been talking with Charlie Hopper of Young & Larimore in Indianapolis and the author of Selling Eating, Restaurant Marketing Beyond the Word Delicious, as well as an ebook called Nuggets, Nibbles, Morsels, Crumbs, a collection of his columns from Food & Drink magazine. For more information, go to sellingeating.com. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2, The Point. Thank you so much for tuning in to our restaurant-focused show here today, and thanks also to our guests, Eddie Somm of Somm's Place, Big Lug Canteen, and Somm's Ale House, and Charlie Hopper of Young & Larimore and the author of Selling Eating. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie.